Yeah, no, there's only Mr. Mkongi and Mr. Anthony who are not able to attend. I think we've asked everyone to come. We know that this is a constituency day, but we've asked members to please come, as we've been asked by Parliament to look at the GIPSA report. So I expected members to be here, because I don't see genuine facts or really why are they not here. Anyway, Mr. Mkongi has got a bereavement in the family, and Mr. Anthony is attending the provincial conference. So Dr. Rupna Rain is also not here. He's attending to some constituency work. So we've asked members to please, really, I think it is important, because this subject involves us very much. Now, without wasting any more time, okay, let me just welcome everyone in the meeting, and especially from the presidency, the delegation here led by Mr. Alan Hirsch, who is the deputy director, the general, the deputy head, policy coordination and advisory services. Welcome, Mr. Hirsch, and I would like you to introduce your team, and you are welcome, all welcome. And we will perhaps only adopt minutes after this presentation. I hope we will work fast so that we finish on time. Over to you, Mr. Hirsch.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you particularly for postponing this discussion from yesterday to today to allow us to participate effectively, because it was originally scheduled for yesterday, so we appreciate that very much. Yes, I'm the deputy head of the policy unit in the presidency, and my colleagues have different roles within the presidency. I think I'll allow them to introduce themselves briefly. First, Nonhlanhla, who's advisor to the deputy president, Grace, who's a special consultant working with us on human resource development issues, particularly GIPSA, and Zuki, who's a member of the deputy president's staff based in Cape Town. And I think that's probably sufficient at this point. I haven't just brought them along as company. I hope that they will play quite an important role in responding to the issues, because we do work very much as a team on GIPSA, and this is just a small part of a much bigger team, which I'll try to explain to you. So may I go into the presentation?
Yeah, members, are you okay with the names of the team here? Okay, you may continue, Mr.
Okay, I just want to explain that there are several documents that you should have before you. The first document is the actual GIPSA report, which is I'm holding up now, which was distributed first in about April this year, and it's a report of the GIPSA activities during the year 2007. Although it's not an annual report in the sense of being a formal account of expenditure, because the GIPSA project doesn't actually have a significant budget. It's more of a coordination and policy project. It's an attempt to report to stakeholders, all stakeholders, Parliament, the educators, business, labor, and so on, who are all partners in the GIPSA program. And you should also have a copy of the presentation that I'm holding it up now. It's this document with two slides per page. There should be 16 slides altogether. This is the presentation that we prepared for today. It's actually largely based on a presentation which we did to Cabinet last week. We were asked to report to Cabinet last week, so this is quite a convenient opportunity to report to Cabinet and Parliament at the same time. And it's an update on the annual report. So you'll find that as I present, I'm presenting information that is more recent than the information in the report. I've also brought a smaller number of copies of the ASGISA annual report, which is a similar kind of report for the ASGISA project as a whole, but unfortunately I've only brought 10. But I can distribute electronic copies of it through the committee secretary if members would like that. let me begin with the presentation, and I'm going to talk very much along according to the slides in the presentation. For just to remind members, the joint initiative for priority skills acquisition was set up as part of the broader ASGISA project, Accelerated Growth and Accelerated and Shared Growth Initiative, under the Deputy President, and it was launched in March 2006. ASGISA as a whole, which focused on the six constraints on shared growth, was launched in February 2006, and then because the stakeholders and the Deputy President felt that the skills constraint, one of the six, was perhaps the most crucial and the one that needed the most close attention, GIPSA was set up as a project within a project. And obviously it was developed to address skills issues, which I'll go into in a bit more detail. But just to describe the structure of GIPSA, what it is. GIPSA is led by a joint task team, which is chaired by the Deputy President, and it consists of the relevant ministers, particularly the ministers of education and labor, science and technology, and several of the economic ministers. And it also includes leaders from the trade union community, so leaders of the trade union federations in particular at that level. It includes CEOs and chairs of various large companies, and it includes representatives of the educators, representatives of the university vice chancellors, and other segments of the education community. And that joint task team meets around four times a year to make decisions, to review progress and make decisions about the future focus of the GIPSA program. It's supported by a technical working group. The technical working group is essentially the senior officials from the same institutions, from government, from business, from labor, and from the educational institutions. And particularly, it also includes the project leaders, so the people who actually are leading the projects on a day-to-day basis that have been agreed to within GIPSA are members of the technical working group. The technical working group is chaired by Becky Nchali Nchali, who is the Deputy General Secretary of KSATU. And on a day-to-day basis, GIPSA is managed or supported by a secretariat of about seven people, I think, which is and then obviously there's a number of other activities which are done by people beyond the secretariat, researchers and so on. The secretariat is located at the National Business Initiative. Initiative is the correct term. And it's funded by the Business Trust. So the Business Trust funds essentially the running costs of the GIPSA Secretariat, the GIPSA meetings and so on. So it really is a partnership between labor, government and business, and that partnership is built into the structure of the GIPSA institutions. If we go to the next slide, GIPSA's methodology. What exactly does GIPSA do? Essentially, within the GIPSA group, there are people who are very knowledgeable, both about the skills needs, particularly the trade unions and the business community. They'll know where there are shortages of particular types of skills and skilled workers. There are experts on the supply of skills, the educators, and there are experts on, well, I suppose they're the government officials and ministers who are responsible for committing resources to addressing those issues as well. So within that group, there would be a discussion about what the key priorities are in terms of skills needs. What is holding up economic growth and shared economic growth? Where are the bottlenecks in the skills area? Is it engineers, artisans? Is it planners? Is it doctors? And so on. And that discussion would take place. And then the smallest number of the most urgent skills needs is focused on, so that we are able to have the maximum impact on the areas where the need is the greatest and where the impact is likely to be the greatest. These issues, say, for example, and we'll go into them in a bit more detail, but say it's a question of engineers, that we would like to run more infrastructure projects, but we are unable to because we don't have enough engineers. If we identify that problem, then we, and these are all decisions that are ultimately made by the joint task team, we commission research that would be undertaken by experts, usually South African experts, skills experts, labor market experts, and they would do a report and they'd say, this is the number of engineers we're producing, this is the number of engineers we need, this is the gap, these are the possible ways of addressing the problem. And then the GIPSA structures will consider the report and make decisions about what to do on the basis of that report. So it's very much evidence-based policy. It's a very empirical project, and wherever we have disputes or arguments about what the problem is or what the cause is, we try to solve it by doing research. So the joint task team makes decisions on the basis of the research, obviously recommendations from the technical working group. And then, once those decisions are made, a project leader would be identified for a particular project. So, for example, early on in the GIPSA project, one of the key issues identified was the fact that we did not have enough artisans, and we were also not producing enough artisans. So the deputy director of the Department of Labor, Sam Moratoba, responsible for skills development, was identified as, and he willingly agreed to lead the project to address the skills issue as far as artisans was concerned, and that, as this committee will know very well, was a very important part of the amendments to the Skills Development Act that have recently gone through Parliament. Other examples would be in the engineering sector, then if the problem is at the university level, then the project leader would probably come from the senior official in the Department of Education responsible for higher education and so on. And what would happen is obviously the ministers and all the principals responsible would agree that this is our target. So our target is, for example, 50,000 additional artisans by 2010, and then the project leader would commit herself or himself to achieving that and set out the process and then report periodically to GIPSA. So it's an interesting, what we've developed a kind of a term for this. We talk about, and that's the fourth bullet point in the methodology slide, project leaders commit themselves voluntarily to meet self-binding targets to address the key challenge. So there's nobody who actually, I mean, we don't, GIPSA doesn't have a budget. We don't say, if the Department of Labor doesn't do this or that, then this will happen. It's very much an agreement and a self-binding target and a monitoring system to make sure that we know what's happening. And if we're not achieving our objectives in time, then we need to review what's happening and see where the bottlenecks are and see if that very high-level joint task team is able to unblock the blockages. To move to the next slide, the original original areas of focus. When GIPSA began with the original joint task team, these are the areas that it was agreed were the areas of the most significant need in terms of skills. The engineers, it was very obvious with both the private sector and particularly the government planning very large infrastructure programs, including electricity, roads, pipelines, airports, and so on. In the private sector, building new mines, building big metals, processing plants, and so on, building new harbors. It's very obvious that we didn't have enough engineers. So that was the first one. Engineers, but also we made a distinction between the engineers who are just essentially graduates, and we do have a reasonable number of graduates coming through the system, but also high-level engineers. In other words, the people who are experienced, who have been in major projects before and who are able to do the planning and the leadership for the very big projects. So we had a problem at both of those levels. And just to explain it briefly, I mean, I suppose it's pretty obvious that we didn't have enough engineers because South Africa hadn't invested enough for a very long period of time. For about 20 years, especially in the 1980s and the 1990s, there was very little fixed investment by the private sector or the public sector. So those engineers that we had, several of them found jobs in other sectors, or they ended up in the Middle East working in Dubai or wherever, and we had that problem when we started to invest vigorously. Same with artisans. We found that there was a big shortage of artisans, and we actually had to, and I'm sure that members are aware, we had to temporarily import welders from the Philippines at one point for a Cecil project. So that was when we realized there's a really serious problem here, and we had started looking at the pipeline for artisans. Urban and regional planners. We identified that problem because, economic development depends heavily on planning and zoning and giving approval and environmental impact assessments and so on, and that system was not running smoothly at all at the municipal and provincial and national levels. So we identified that problem. Technicians and technologists, these are people with some tertiary education and qualification in scientific, I mean, it could be engineering related or scientific related or IT, and there we found there was a big gap between what we needed and what we had. Managers in education and healthcare, we agreed, government and the rest of the community, that one of the challenges that we faced in terms of public service was the quality of management in the education sector and in the healthcare sector, and that became an area of focus. Obviously, the whole area of maths and science competences and also language in schools, in general education. Then the industrial policy support, we've agreed first of all within ASGISA and then subsequently within the industrial policy action plans, which are published now annually by the Department of Trade and Industry, identified certain sectors to focus on for development, and they are particularly sectors which can absorb labor. And initially, we identified business process outsourcing, tourism, and biofuels as potential areas where skills would be needed if the industrial policies were going to be successful. And then also a few cross-cutting skills in financial and project management and in ICTs. So those were all of the areas that that GIPSA decided to focus on at the beginning. Let's move to the next slide, progress in GIPSA. We released this report, which you have, the second annual GIPSA progress report in April. And we've, I think I'm not going to summarize the report. You'll find that the achievements of GIPSA are up to at least the end of 2007, some a little bit later, are summed up particularly in the table. There's a table, a matrix, at the back of the document, which we hope is a good reflection of where we achieved at that point and where we still needed to do a lot more work. But in this presentation, I'm going to update that a little bit. However, and this is a point that the Deputy President stressed when briefing us for this engagement, that we should stress that our accomplishments so far are actually not as great as the challenges that remain before us. And we mustn't lose sight of the fact that even though we seem to have made progress, there's still a lot more to do, and a lot more to do than we've already done. In July, a few months ago, the joint task team decided to continue with most of the focus areas, the ones that I mentioned earlier, but some were no longer necessary to be handled by GIPSA because they were taken up elsewhere in appropriate institutions such as ICT training, which is the responsibility of the eSkills Council now. So as there's an eSkills Council, GIPSA doesn't need to focus on that anymore. And business process outsourcing, which was taken up effectively by the Department of Labor and the Department of Trade and Industry and at provincial and local level in many centres. So those programs were running effectively and didn't need GIPSA support. And in the area of health management, we're not sure at this point whether the GIPSA support for the health department is necessary or not. We need to perhaps return to them on that issue. But it seemed as if the health department didn't need GIPSA support on that issue. The one additional area that that the GIPSA joint task team agreed on at the July meeting after some discussion and some research was that because of the challenge of rural development in South Africa and particularly because of the weak performance of the agricultural sector over many years. Even though it may have recovered a bit this year, it's still, over the long run, much weaker than it was 10 or 20 years ago, and much weaker than it should be in terms of our potential. And also because rural poverty is such a central issue in our society that we had to focus much more on agricultural and rural development skills. So that it was agreed that we should focus on that. But because GIPSA has a limited lifespan, and I'll get back to that point, we didn't want to take on too many additional tasks at this point, but that was the one big one. I'm just going to go through I'm trying to take too much time, Chair, but I just want to go through each of the areas and report on what has been achieved or hasn't, or both. Firstly, engineers. We originally set out a target of 2,500 engineers that should graduate annually by 2010. But in the engagements with the Education Department, they indicated that we would only achieve 2,000. Now, to put that in perspective, at the beginning of this decade, around 2002 or so, we were only graduating about 1,200 or 1,300 engineering graduates a year. By 2006, when we were reviewing the situation, the Education Department and the universities had already raised that up to about 1,500 a year, but we felt that we needed another 1,000 a year. But in terms of the ability of the rate of the engineering departments at the universities to expand, it was felt that a target of an additional 500 a year by 2010 would be possible, and that remains the target. So it's a 33% increase on the level of 2006, which is a big increase. But it's also if you compare it to what the level was in 2002, it will have almost doubled between 2002 and 2010. So although it's not high enough, it's quite a rapid expansion of our capacity to produce engineering graduates. But clearly it's not enough, and perhaps the next government has to look at a target beyond 2010 to raise the level of engineers to a higher level. The What I think we were increasingly focusing on is the people who are not necessarily engineers who go through the academic universities, but also people with engineering qualifications who go through the universities of technology and the FET system. And there we need to invest a lot more in the various other technicians and technologists and engineering diplomates who can make a major contribution. And that's where increasing attention was focused when it was realized that there was a limited rate to which we could expand the university throughput. The other issue that comes up here and comes up in several other places is the shortage of trainers. At the university level, to a certain extent, at the University of Technology level as well, and at the FET level, at all of those levels, there's a shortage of qualified people to train people in the engineering professions. One of the reasons for that is the fact that we are growing rapidly at the moment, and we have a lot of investment projects and people who have been drawn out of the educational system into the private sector for understandable reasons. But we now have to rebuild our resources in the educational sector. There are also issues relating to registration and professional associations, which are quite important, and I think will be before Parliament this year around some of those issues, registration and professional associations in the engineering sector. The next area is this area of high-level engineers and planning, particularly the planning area, where for the high-level engineers, the key issues are really around the fact that we need to bring back retired engineers or people who are qualified engineers into the engineering profession, and also we need to continue to attract high-level engineers from abroad because some of our graduate engineers aren't able to be properly employed unless they have the right kind of supervision. So you can't create an experienced a high-level engineer in a short period of time. So the only alternative, well, the two alternatives are to bring them back from retirement or to import them. And there we, although the Department of Home Affairs and the Department of Labor's focus on immigration of skilled people has strengthened a great deal over the last few years, we believe that there's still more that we can do in that area. The next area is the technologists and technicians. Here, we found that there is an awareness in society now of the value of these kinds of skills, technical skills, in the economy, and a lot more people are registering to do technological diplomas and degrees and so on. The problem is that the throughput is poor. In other words, the rate of completion of degrees and diplomas isn't what it should be. Possibly because of the level of preparation of the candidates, possibly because the shortage of skilled staff means that they are not properly prepared during their courses. So the main focus on technicians and technologists is to improve the throughput through the system through better preparation, better selection, better training at the educational institutions. The private sector has also contributed particularly, and this is very important for these kinds of professions and also for artisans, to provide experiential learning opportunities. To become a technician or a technologist or an artisan, you have to have exposure to the business that you are to be employed in. And this was a problem in the past. The big businesses, both public sector and private sector, were not providing enough opportunities for qualified but not yet professionally ready technologists and artisans, and now they are making a bigger contribution. But we believe that can go further, and we believe that there are a lot of people who have qualified as technicians and technologists who could be further trained to become engineers if the companies in which they're employed support them to do that, and that would also help address some of our issues. contribute onto artisans, the original calculation we did was that South Africa needs at least 50,000 artisans. Well, that was in 2006, by 2010. Now, this committee and the Department of Labor and Parliament as a whole has finalized the Skills Development Amendment Act, which is a very important step towards increasing the output of artisans, because we now have four approved paths for artisans to qualify through, which wasn't previously the case. They can qualify through the apprenticeship path, which is the traditional one, through learnerships, which is the sort of more modern version where you accumulate a number of learnerships plus experience and then do your exams and become an artisan. You can do it through internships and the national certificate program through the FETs and the universities of technology, and then some experience. And then also there's the path of recognition of prior learning. Those people who have been employed in those capacities for a long period of time, but their abilities are not formally recognized. So those are now all agreed to by all the stakeholders and in the law, and that should lead to a significant increase in the throughput of artisans. Also, the Department of Labor obtained the agreement from the CETAs to register for training 22,000 artisans this year. Now, assuming that they all complete their programs, and it'll take 3 years for them to get to the point. It's normally about a three-year period. Whichever path they follow, it's normally about a three-year period at least to complete your qualification as an artisan. But that is a significant commitment. So the CETAs agreed to commit their resources, some of their discretionary resources, a significant amount of it, to registering artisans. Also in business, there are several partnerships in business, one of which is called the Technical Business Skills Partnership, which is a partnership between a number of very large public and private sector companies, which is committed to training about 5,500 artisans and operatives over the next 3 years. So that's another area. But to continue the next slide, in the artisan area, another issue that had to be addressed was the question of tax incentives. There are tax incentives through and a tax allowance, effectively, for learnerships and for artisans. The anomaly was that although a learnership is normally about 1 year and the artisan program is about 3 years, the tax incentive for the two was the same. So what the Department of Labor and the Treasury have agreed to is to increase the tax allowance for apprenticeships to make it equivalent to the 3 years of a learnership program. And that apparently will be going through in the tax amendment bill. I'm not sure if it's already gone through Parliament. It may have. There is a question which employers raise in GIPSA quite frequently, which I don't think we've completely addressed yet, although the tax incentive is important. But the question is, if employers agree to employ above their requirements, in other words, if, say, Sasol needs 200 artisans a year, but they agree to train 400 artisans a year because they want to make a contribution to the society, obviously it's in their interest because many of those people will go to their suppliers and their customers and so on, but it's clearly something that they're doing that they don't need to do. What is there some way of rewarding them? And that's something that we still are discussing and need to find an appropriate way to address that. Another issue relating to artisans is the question of assessors. Now, assessments have up to this point only taken place at the Indlela Center, and there haven't been enough assessors. So to address this, we are, and this is also in the Skills Amendment Act, now allowing for assessment centers to be located around the country, not only at the Indlela Center. And we also looking at every opportunity to train assessors. Now to the area of town and regional planners. then this is a problem. I mean, this certainly is a problem in that not all the provinces and not all our municipalities have enough skilled planners to do the work that's required, particularly in this period of relatively fast development. But we found that the research that was done for GIPSA, although it's still subject to dispute to a certain extent, but the research found that if you look at the number of people who graduate with planning qualifications from university annually, there should be enough people to fill those posts. The problem was more a question of how do you retain planners in the planning profession. That seemed to be the key issue, and that related to the conditions of employment for planners in the public sector in particular. It related to regulatory issues, to accreditation issues, registration issues, and the general career environment for planners. There is now, what we did was we set up a working group to try to address these issues. So all the relevant organizations, the professional associations, the Department of Provincial and Local Government, and so on, convened by GIPSA through the presidency, are meeting to try to sort through all of these issues, because it is a complex issue. One of the elements would be the activation of the South African Council of Planners, which some of you might have seen recently. The Department of Land Affairs has reactivated and has advertised for nominations to that. So we think that will be quite an important step forward in that area. In the tourism sector, it's mainly worked through GIPSA providing some technical support through experts that we found to help the department in developing and in reviewing its human resource development strategy. And there are a number of issues that the department has that relate, which are tied essentially to 2010, 2010 obviously being a key objective in terms of tourism development. And then there's the issue of the effectiveness of the CETA in that sector, which we want to continue to monitor. Then to move on to education management and planning, here the Department of Education has asked GIPSA to provide some support in developing a strategy around education planning. And that's just begun. In the math, science, and language competence in schools, we're not playing, GIPSA isn't playing a central role. Obviously, it's one of the core issues faced by the Education Department, but we are participating in Deputy Minister Surti's Maths and Science Education Quality Reference Group, and help. We bring expertise into the project where we're able to do that to support the program. Also, I think that the other contribution that GIPSA has made in this area is to continue to encourage businesses to support the Adopt a School program. I didn't mention it in the summary in the presentation, but the Adopt a School program and various other forms of business support to schools, and particularly high schools, the GIPSA has provided a forum to improve those partnerships. And for the new area of focus, the top of page 7, we're at a very early stage. We've agreed, the joint task team and all the other elements of GIPSA are now committed to, first of all, reviewing, doing a kind of an audit of the skill situation in agriculture and rural development, trying to identify some of the key solutions to that. And I think we should recall when we think about that it's a wide range of issues we're looking at. We're looking at the training of agricultural workers. We're looking at the training of agricultural employers, the farmers, the big farmers, the small farmers. We're looking at extension officers. We're looking at where there is a big shortage of extension officers, which the Agriculture Department is, at a national and provincial level, are committed to closing the gap between the number we need and the number we have. And also in the research field, we believe that we are under-invested in agricultural research to support farmers. So those are the main areas, but there are probably others that will come up in the research as well that we will have to discuss, you know, how to address those issues. Then to move on to the placement program, GIPSA has, as one of its activities, supports placement, which is really sort of closing the gap between opportunities for training, for employment or training, and the people who are qualified but not employed in the local placement area. And there, the local placement program is aimed at unemployed young people. It's managed by the Umsobomvu Youth Fund through the job program, and the Department of Labor supports it. It has been relatively successful in the sense that it is operating and running and continuing to run run effectively, and I think the quality of the management of the program is steadily improving, but there is a lot of scope for expanding this activity. International placement is not exactly the same thing. International placement is where there are young people who may be employed, or likely to be employed, but not necessarily, but have some sort of professional qualification, but need to upgrade their professional qualification to make them a bigger asset for society. And that could be in any of the technical areas of ICT or engineering or financial management and so on. And a number of countries have offered to businesses and governments of other countries have offered to take our people and give them training and experiential learning opportunities. And we've done that as much as we could so far with significant positive results. But, and this is a point I'll get back to in a minute, we haven't been able to take advantage of the opportunities sufficiently. And there's a proposal which was discussed in Cabinet recently and there seems to be general support, although there isn't yet an approval of a plan. That would have to come a little later. But to set up an agency, a dedicated agency, to address the challenge of placements, both domestically and internationally. So we feel that because of all the... Well, I'll get back to that in a minute. Okay, now just the second last slide, and this is also a slide that the Deputy President insisted that we include, that we shouldn't underestimate the challenges that lie ahead. GIPSA has achieved a fair amount in basically clearing bottlenecks, getting things done that would have taken longer to do or might not have happened at all. But there are a lot of issues that we haven't been able to address effectively yet. Some of the ones would be, even in the engineering sector where we have made progress, there's obviously still a gap. In the artisan sector, we still haven't produced the number of artisans we need to, even though we've cleared the way to do that. The issue of training the trainer, both at all levels, at the FET level, at the assessor level in the Ndlela Center and other centers, at the university level, is a challenge. The private sector supports GIPSA, and I think a lot of companies have made a significant contribution, but if you compare the performance of the South African private sector and benchmark it with the rest of the world, there's a lot more that they could be doing. And we believe so. It's not only government, but it's also the private sector that needs to do a great deal more. And then back to the placement issue, we believe that there are still significant weaknesses in the placement programs or opportunities that have to be addressed. We need to be able to take up more of the offers which are on the table and even identify more opportunities and get offers in other areas, to recruit people to those placement opportunities, to select them well, to orient them appropriately for the place that they're going to go to support them while they are in the placement process, to target the able but poor particularly, those people who really need the opportunity and wouldn't be able to get them without this kind of support. And we believe that we can solve these problems, but only once we've established a strong, dedicated agency. So those are some of the challenges. Now, to move on to the last slide, the transition from GIPSA to the Human Resource Development Strategy South Africa, HRDS-SA, that's an acronym that is going to become a lot more familiar, I think, over the next few months. The Human Resource Development Strategy South Africa is a comprehensive comprehensive approach to addressing our human resource development challenges, which the Minister of Education was asked to prepare for government, and which he did, and which was taken in a fairly advanced form, essentially a relatively final design form, to the Cabinet Lekgotla in July, and was supported by the Cabinet Lekgotla. So over the next few months, the department and the minister will be consulting with stakeholders on the implementation of the decisions, and hopefully we'll be able to make decisions relatively soon about establishing the institutions that will support the human resource development strategy. So the idea is that we have a more comprehensive approach to our human resource development challenges, which remain amongst the major challenges. The question arises, obviously, what happens to GIPSA, because we're formalizing, in a way, the GIPSA structures. And for at the moment, in the preparation for a human resource development strategy South Africa, the GIPSA process is engaging with that process and has supported it and has contributed to it and has commented and will continue to do that. The GIPSA Secretariat, it's been agreed by all the relevant stakeholders, Cabinet and the Business Trust who pay for it and so on, that it should continue at least for a year beyond the point at which the Human Resource Development Strategy is supposed to come into operation. So the Human Resource Development Strategy institution will become established from April next year if it goes according to plan, but the GIPSA institution will run in parallel for at least a year, it's been agreed, and will essentially provide support to the development of the new structure. And then GIPSA stakeholder structures and possibly other elements of GIPSA will be incorporated into the Human Resource Development Strategy South Africa in a suitable way to maintain the momentum of GIPSA, to try and retain some of the key people that we've developed in the GIPSA system, and also to keep the relationships and the methodologies in operation as much as possible. But obviously, there are still some of the finer points, and this is the last point, about the structure of the new Human Resource Development Strategy and where elements of the strategy are located. For example, I think everybody agrees that there will be a stakeholder council similar to the GIPSA joint task team of business and government, and labor, and educators. But exactly how that is located within government is still obviously to be finalized in all of these discussions. So that's, Chair, a report on where we are. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Heath. Members, that was the progress report, and you heard about the purpose of GIPSA, and of course, and discussions, and also the support that GIPSA gave to different departments and other sectors. And of course, I'm sure you'd want to know of some of the few things, more especially that we have been dealing with the Skills Development Amendment Act, and of course, it involves so many things. We know that we've been always talking about shortage of skills in our country. So I'm sure you are going to have questions of clarities, and as you know that this report has been referred to us by Parliament to consider. So surely we are going to have some questions. Now, for those who were not here earlier on, the presenter is the DDG in the Presidency Office, Mr. Alan Heath. He's not alone. He's accompanied by his team, Umamun Nonlandla, Njoli Mube, who is the advisor, and also the economic advisor next to Mr. Heath, Mr. Hesh. Am I correct, Alan Hesh? And also the GIPSA coordinator, the Grace Mabumbulu, and of course the other one is the PLO, Parliamentary Liaison Officer, Nemedem, yeah, Uzuki, Nombembe. That is the team accompanying Mr. Hiss. Let me start by reminding members that after questions, we are going to remain for adoption of just few minutes. There are sets of business that needs our quorum. Please, members, we are here for this. Let's just try and finish our business. I'm sure we won't leave before we finish our business. So can I open for questions? I've seen Mrs. Dreya, Mr. Zondeki, Ms. Rajbali, Mr. Labuskahne, Mr. Nene, and Mr. Spies, the last one, Dati Mohali. In that order, please. Mrs. Dreya.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to the presenter. Yes, I have a few questions for clarity. On page 4, progress by area of focus, the last bullet point there on the first slide, appointment of an immigration advisory board would assist. If you could just clarify exactly or elaborate a little on what is meant by that. We all know that while we're growing our own skills, which is a medium to longer term, we have to appoint people immediately, and that's where we can do that simply by importing them. Either foreigners or South Africans who've gone into exile or who've immigrated, we can bring them back. So if we can just look at the Immigration Advisory Board, because I believe there are problems with bringing people back into the country, skilled people. The next question is to do with progress area by focus. We talk about throughput. We admitted that that is a problem. While many learners are registered at CITAS and at other places, we don't see them following through. They fall between the cracks or they drop out before they get to the exit point. So throughput is a problem. How are they intending to address that problem of throughput? And it ties up with on page 5 where we see the Department of Labor has agreed as an agreement of CITAS for 22,000 artisans to register for training that year. Okay, that's again the input is on registering. What about making sure that we have successful throughput? And on page 6, he mentioned specifically the effectiveness of the CETA, that's the Tourism and Hospitality CETA, is a problem that needs to be monitored. Is monitoring enough, or what are they doing more than just monitoring it? We actually need to make inputs or to take action to ensure that they, the CETA and other CETAs are achieving what they're supposed to achieve. So what else other than just monitoring are doing? Madam Chair, then the last one is on page 7.